solve large, intractable problems.
It's a new venture altogether.
Your brain is a wild horse there.
Because remember, writing is not a team sport.
You are not selling horse carriages when there are cars.
I want to be known only as a trusted advisor.
More like a tourist.
Play to Potential Podcast.
This is one of the mantras which I used to use when I was leading State Bank of India, that everybody has a role. And if you do your role, fine. But what's so great about it? What is the plus in the role? So everybody must have a role plus. You have a role. And that plus you decide for yourself. It could be coaching a colleague. It could be getting a PhD. It could be instead of financing 100 cars, you finance 110 cars. You decide. But there has to be a plus in your role. And it is that plus that makes you different from others, and it is that plus which defines the direction and the quality of your growth.
Welcome to the 36th conversation at the Play to Potential podcast, a series of reflective conversations with leaders across disciplines on topics around leadership, transitions, and careers. I'm Deepak Jayaraman, your host and curator of the podcast. I'm an executive coach, and I work with leaders during high-stakes transition, whether it's a role transition, a leadership transition in a company, or a career transition in an individual's life. To know more about the advisory work I do, please visit transitioninsight.com. I believe that just like businesses need to be coherent about their answers to where to play and how to win, we all need to be thoughtful about our responses to the two questions, where to go and how to grow. This podcast is an attempt at exploring how some leaders across domains have grappled with these two questions as they've gone about their respective journeys. My guest this time is Mr. Om Prakash Bhatt, former chairman of State Bank of India. Today, he's on multiple prestigious boards, including ONGC, Hindustan Unilever Limited, and Standard Chartered Bank. He's the chairperson of the board at Tata Steel. I had the privilege of meeting him when I did the Directors Club program a couple of years back. Directors Club is run by Hunt Partners and Board Evaluations Limited, which is a UK-based company. It equips individuals to become effective board members by exposing them to best-in-class practices, perspectives from industry leaders and academicians, and by building a network of like-minded peers that can share ideas on board-related matters. I had the opportunity to experience Mr. Bhatt's weight and wisdom as part of that program. I would strongly recommend the program for anybody who's keen to get onto a board and develop a grounded and a nuanced understanding of what it takes to be a board member. A quick thought on how you can consume the podcast. If you want to listen offline, say during a car ride, plane travel, gym session, or a morning walk, you might want to use one of the popular podcast apps out there. Google and Apple have their podcast players, Spotify, Savan, Stitcher, and so on. If you're keen to get insights across speakers, I would urge you to visit the curated playlist section of the website, playtopotential.com. If you want to be informed when I upload new content, you could sign up on the website. You have my word that you will receive less than 2 emails a month, and your data will not be shared with any external organization. Without further ado, over to my conversation with Mr. O.P. Bhatt.
Mr. Bhatt, thank you so much for your time. Excited to be talking to you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure for me, actually.
Lovely. Maybe a good place to start is trying to get a sense of what your pie chart of time looks like today. What do you do? And more importantly, why do you do what you do?
So one thing about my time is that it is definitely not in my control. I engage with a bunch of companies, mostly at the board level, but even otherwise, informally, advisor, one-to-one, mentoring, you know, some of it informal, some of it formal. So at least at the companies where I engage with at the board level, they decide when there is a meeting, where there is a meeting, and it can, sometimes if there is a conflict, sometimes it is back-to-back, sometimes chock-a-book, in 1 week I may have 20 meetings, and sometimes, you know, 1 week may have nothing to do. Mm-hmm. So one is that my time is definitely not in my control. So whatever time I have, I tend to spend maybe with self and family, and self would be, you know, reading or, you know, doing things that you would do as a family. We have two daughters and things like that. So There is, of course, some minimal engagements. In Mumbai, you can't avoid it.
Sure.
But my instincts are to sort of button down, be below the radar.
I want to talk about the transition to board roles, Mr. Bhatt. The first is, I think, I want to understand, having been a board member for several years now, you know, what is a question people should ask themselves, senior executives, to see if boards is an avenue through which they could contribute, you know, or to put it more bluntly, who should not become a board member? Because when people retire as CEOs, they try and say, what can I do? How can I be of service? And boards comes up as one of the options. But still, there is a certain temperament and attitudes that's required to be a board member, not just skill sets. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, the kind of people that you think flourish in a board context and the kind of people that don't.
So board by definition is a, you know, bunch of people who bring diverse experiences, diverse backgrounds, diverse competences, and collectively maybe all that they bring is what the company requires at that point of time, right? So all board members are therefore to some extent quite different from each other. And yet what I think is, you know, at the board level, see, any company, whether it's a bank or whether it's steel, auto, whatever, IT company, any company has enough expertise within the company. Any good company, chief executive, senior executive officers, domain experts, they have a lot of competency within themselves. And what they don't have, they can hire, they can get consultants, they can have people on contract, all kind of things. So I'm not minimizing, you know, domain competencies or specialist knowledge or whatever it is. But what I'm saying is this is merely one of the requirements of a board member. There are other things which I think are more important for a board member, right? So that mindset, whether everybody has or does not have, is a bit of a question in my mind. But in that mindset, you know, that mindset comes or does not come because of where you were in the past. So if it is a chief executive who becomes a board member, he's trained to be the boss. He's trained to be in the command and control framework. He's trained to, you know, get all credit and, you know, bask in all that glory and things that happened. And now, you know, he's here, one of many. And whatever he contributes to the board, even if it is the most important idea or most important intervention that is made in that company, it is the CEO or the chairman or somebody else who gets that glory out of it. So how much does it disappoint him, if not hurt him? And how much, therefore, you know, because of this, he's not able to give his best to the board, right? So to my mind, it is, you know, apart from competencies for which you have been chosen to participate in a board, apart from that, what is important is a contributory mindset, for want of a better word. Maybe coach or mentor is also not the right thing. You know, can you enjoy giving of yourselves to the occasion, to the problem, to the person, to the company, in a manner that you actually enjoy doing that? You like doing, you know, because you have got so much in life. You have so much in terms of experience, in terms of wisdom. What are you going to do with it if you're not going to give it away for a better cause? So if you have that mindset, you will become a very good board member, because you're giving away for the good of others, other people, other executives, the company, etc., etc. And the pleasure that you get is to see them succeed, to see the company succeed, to see the company build a great reputation or whatever it is. For all the things that you care for, it could be sustainability, it could be corporate social responsibility, it could be whatever, right? But if you don't have that mindset that no matter what kind of competencies you have, there is a certain harshness around you, or there is a certain reserve in giving. And you may say all the right things at all the right times, which others would also do, or which the executives would also do, but you may not bring about that little extra catalyst in your interactions, which makes the difference.
Hmm. And for people, for senior executives who transition from an executive to a non-executive kind of a role, what are the few things they need to learn and unlearn? You know, what are the new muscles that they build? And plus, what are the behaviors they need to stop?
So it's around this contributory mentality only. So for example, you know, they've been leading a team. Now they're part of a team.
Mm.
They've been giving instructions, commanding people. Now they have to be, you know, they have to use persuasion, influence, you know, through conversation, right? Sometimes it seems that it's a big change, therefore. For some people, this transition, once they are aware that this is a transition they have to make, they can actually make it. It may take some time and effort, but they can make it. Some people, even after becoming aware that this is what needs to be done so that they are the right mindset for the board, some people actually cannot make it.
And why is that? What's the reason in those situations?
I think it's hard-coded psychology. It's too much of me, I. You see a lot of speeches around with that language also, you know, every sentence or even across the table. So I think it's psychology only. And therefore, these days there is a lot of psychometrics being done when you recruit people for an organization, any capacity, at least middle to senior capacities. I wonder whether there should be some psychometric test for board members and thereafter, you know, give them some induction into some of these attributes which are required.
And again, talking about maybe the first 3 to 6 months or first, let's say, 2 to 3 board meetings, as the case might be, again, any wisdom for things that board members should do to settle well into a new board context?
So there are some things which the company should be doing.
Right.
So one which I've been advocating very strongly is that the company should prepare a kind of an induction program, maybe 5 sessions, 10 sessions, 20 sessions, whatever it is, you know, with senior executives, different subjects, maybe visits to plants and offices and things like that. So that is something which the company needs to do. So it exposes the new director to the innards of the company so that whatever comes to the board subsequently, agenda papers, etc., he's, you know,
has
more
context.
At home, mm-hmm. Right? Also, he knows some of these people, senior executives. In addition to the board member, the immediate, the people who are immediately below the board, executive, etc., he gets to know some of them either personally or otherwise. So that is, I think the company needs to take this step and to take it in a very structured, thoughtful way. The person who joins the board also has to be very thoughtful. In fact, I tell people that, you know, when you get invited to join a board, you must think, why do you want to join this company? Do you like the domain in which they work? Do you like the chairman? Do you like the company's reputation in the market? Do you know any board members? What do you think of them? Are you going there for ego satisfaction? Are you going there because you've got spare time? Or are you going there because you think you can make a positive difference? What is the difference you think you can make to this company? So it's important for them to think about some of these things before they say yes to joining a board. But even after joining a board, so for example, on a few companies at a board level, so supposing I'm in a company which deals with auto, if there is any news item, not only about this company, but about the auto sector, you know, I'm sort of drawn to it. I want to read what it is about, what it is, this, that, and that. So how do you keep yourself hungry to get all the knowledge, not information, but knowledge around this company? And how do you sort of become such that automatically your subconscious is processing it against this company, against some old agenda paper, against something, therefore you're going to talk in the next meeting or ring up and tell the CEO something about it? I mean, will your involvement and engagement come to this level where it becomes like this? If it becomes like this and you're constantly doing things to remain relevant and knowledgeable, because, you know, in a board, whatever agenda paper comes, suppose there is a presentation of 10 slides. For those 10 slides, those people would have gone through thousands of pages. They would have spent days, weeks, months in preparing that, right? You get only those 10 sheets of paper. If you are going to participate in an intellectual discussion based on just that, then you are completely inadequate, you know. Mm. So the asymmetry is huge. Mm. And you're not in the organization, you're not part of the organization, you don't have access to many of this. You can if you want to, but then you should know what to ask. So if a board member wants to meet so-and-so or discuss so-and-so topic, nobody's going to say no to him. No company will say no to him. So therefore, how do you keep abreast? What do you read? Who are your friends? Who do you meet? What do you talk about? In the context of board meetings. And And it is sort of, you know, almost continuous. So if you don't have that mindset, if it is only switch on and switch off, call board meeting, so you do something, then maybe you will not be a good board member.
And you briefly spoke about this, Mr. Bhatt. In terms of selecting which boards you get on to, and you also spoke about some criteria, but what are some of the mistakes you see people make when, you know, in terms of selection of boards that they get on to?
So I think the first mistake people make is that they don't select. They say yes to the first board that they are invited to. I don't think people select. Most people do not select. See, most board positions are such that, you know, they are not available all the time. You know, not many of them are available. Rarely it comes 1, 2, 3, 4. It's by word of mouth. So somebody, your friend or your old boss or somebody may just call you, or a headhunter may call you, right? Be one at a time, right? Next one may come after 3 months or 1 year or whatever it is, may not come also. So when it comes, I don't think people give themselves the luxury of selection. They say yes. And this is what I tell everybody. I said, the first time you get invited to join a board, say no. If they have really done research on you, they really want you for all the right, they'll come back. They'll persuade you. They'll want to have a conversation with you at least. Meanwhile, you do your research. So when the conversation takes place, it'll be more meaningful. You know, it'll tell you more things about the company, things that you do not know, things which will help you take a decision, yes or no, whatever it is. But you can't say yes.
That's an interesting point. Exercise the choice. Sometimes people just don't even...
In this, most people do not know. Unless, you know, they are overboarded, they don't have time, this, that, and the other. But a person who's transiting from an executive or some other level, academician, bureaucrat, whatever it is, and now wants to transition into boards, most people take the first things that come.
Figuring out which boards to get on to can be a tricky problem indeed. One of my earlier guests, Vinita Bali, for instance, spoke about how she thought about the board she picked.
Boards serve the purpose of a continuous learning and development plan, right, as a non-exec. You're learning about different domains, how they look at opportunities and businesses and so on. So certainly for me, global boards are critical and important because I do like a global perspective. In fact, I got off a lot of Indian boards and I wanted to restrict them really, because there are only so many boards you can do if you want to be, a productive board member.
Right.
So, again, I joined the board of Crisil, which is very much an analytical company. Mm-hmm. It does a bunch of different things. Ratings is only part of their business. Sure. It has, again, an ability to interact with executives from S&P and McGraw-Hill who are on the board. So, in my case, I have chosen boards that will expand my horizon.
Right.
Both from a domain perspective as well as from a geographic perspective.
I guess there's no one right answer, but we need to be true to our experiences, our skill sets and mindsets as we make the choice. To know more, you might find the Nugget 16.09 with Vinita Bali relevant. You can find that at playtopotential.com. If you find the podcast of value, I would really appreciate you rating or writing a review on iTunes. It will help others discover the content. Now, let's get back to the conversation with Mr. O.P. Bhatt.
How have you chosen the boards you're on? It's a pretty disparate starting from Standard Chartered to ONGC to HUL to Tata Steel.
Actually, I've been quite lucky. Actually, I got invited to all the boards. I didn't have to choose. I just got invited. And the kind of boards that I was invited to, as you're saying yourself, you know, there is very little reason to say no, except you don't have enough time.
Got it. I want to talk about the transition from being a board member to being a chairman. In your experience, what are the new muscles to be built and what are the few things to be unlearned when you make that transition?
So for me, I was the chairman first and I became a board member much later, right? I was chairman for almost 5 years, State Bank board. And at that point of time, how I would have behaved as a chairman would be completely different from what I think how a board member or a chairman should behave, because that has been my learning
post that. And this comes to back to my old point that people are not trained, people do not know, neither the company nor people themselves do something about it. So therefore, in some senses, it is an opportunity lost. So building from that, if you were to become a chairman from being a board member, so if you look at the board as a place where you have dialogues and discussions around a topic or many topics for the good of the company, the role of the chairman, to my mind, is how to draw the best from everyone. Now, in a board, I have seen that, you know, everybody doesn't talk. Sometimes it's not necessary for everybody to talk, but there are people who talk more and there are people who talk less. And just because somebody is talking less doesn't mean that he doesn't have anything to contribute. Maybe he has, but the boardroom dynamics, his own personal diffidence or shyness, or variety of other factors inhibit him from speaking. Likewise, the guys who are doing most of the talking, it is not necessary that they may be making the best contribution. Maybe they are, but maybe they are also missing out on something or the other. So if these two things are happening simultaneously in a board discussion, and if nothing is done about it, then I think it is the company and the board which is the loser. Hmm. So the chairman has to be wise to this, that, you know, this is a talk shop. You get wisdom out of dialogue. So how can you tease words out of people's mouth? How can you provoke people to talk more sense? You know, you will find that when you have a dialogue, whatever you are saying in the first instance, when 2, 3, 4 people start talking about the same thing, the sense changes, the meaning changes, the concept changes, your understanding changes, everything changes. And it can happen in a very gentle, very wise way, or it can happen in a very confrontationist way. So it is for the chairman to help make it very gentle and very wise and very continuing, so that no egos are hurt, yet everybody is able to have their point of view. Everybody is able to unburden themselves of their wisdom for the benefit of the collective around which they are sitting. And everybody can do it in a spirit of contribution. And the, you know, chairman's even calling out to somebody, hey, can I hear what you have to say about this? Or even stopping somebody from saying more because he's hogged a lot of space already. But how does it do it gently without causing any offense, making it natural? Or when the conversation going in a wrong direction, or when the conversation is going nowhere, or when he feels that enough has not come out, how does he, you know, tease meaning out of people? How does he tease sense out of people? This, I think, is at the board, when the board is in action, is the most important attribute of the chairman. If you can do this, you know, wonders can happen. So there are many things that he needs to do before and after. Sure. That is a different thing, right?
Sure.
But I think what is visible and what to me is more important is this part of the chairman's job.
And you spoke about setting the right climate or setting the right tone for the conversation, for people to listen to each other and have a constructive conversation. Anything from your experience that you've done to set the right tone? What does it go to ensure that you set the right climate?
So again, it will depend upon, you know, personalities and your own thought processes. So for example, though I did say that I became chairman first and maybe I made many mistakes, but some of the things I would do would be, you know, I would talk to many of the board members one-to-one, you know, just myself and them before a board meeting, after a board meeting. Now, this is not, I don't know what people, I think everybody must be doing that, but so one is to get your comfort level with this board member high and vice versa, right? He does not know who you are, where you are coming from, what is this kind of board. It can be intimidating for him. But also, to exchange views in general, say about the company, or in particular about the kind of issues the company is grappling with at this point of time, or to be very specific about something which is very important for whatever reason. It's a large balance sheet item, it's a fraud, some technology investment, it is a customer that there is a... You can talk about all these things also, right? So, some of these conversations cannot take place on the board level because the magic of one-to-one will go away. What happens is, so some people may not want to do one-to-one, they may feel they should not do it, but I used to do it, you know. So that is one of the things that we used to do, right? And it would be with as many people as it was possible, were available, were willing to do that, was necessary. So this is one of the things outside the board meeting there is. The other thing is that sometimes board members, they don't know enough about the company. They may want to know about something, or they want to go somewhere, travel, meet somebody. You know, to make the companies working, information around the company, people, etc., available to the board members. Not that the company is doing them a favor, but it's their right to know about the company. It's their right to know about the people in the company. It's their right to know about the processes taking place at the company, so that they can serve the company better. So how do you make it so that it's easy and natural for people to, you know, ask questions or ask for information or ask for engagements? You know, I want a 1 hour meeting with the HR head because I think someone. So how do you facilitate all these things so that, you know, it's a friendly club?
This is your host Deepak Jayaraman here. This segment reminded me of the podcast conversation I had with Ravi Venkatesan a few months back. Ravi sits on several boards and is also the chairperson for Bank of Baroda. He spoke about the criticality of listening and forming a nuanced picture of the context in these situations.
As you know, that about 18 months ago, I took on a completely new role as the chairman of a public sector bank.
Right.
Now, I know nothing about banking, and I know even less about public sector. But yet, Raghu and Raghuram Rajan and Jayant Sinha felt that it was important that I take it on, so I did. Now, what do you do in this situation? And you know that the place is filled with landmines, and you can step on anything and without realizing it and get blown up. So what you have to do is listen intently, and I did. I made it a very conscious effort to listen to a bunch of people, retired chairman of the Bank of Baroda. Okay, so help me understand from your perspective, you know, what I should do, what the issues are, how would you handle them? And you get a certain perspective. I went and spoke to Vagul of ICICI and PJ Nayak of Axis Bank.
Sure.
Even though they've been around and seen the evolution of the banking sector. I've met a lot of our own employees and so forth. So from this, you begin to piece together first the situation, and then out of that emerges a theory of change, which is, you know, what interventions are really going to make a difference, and who are going to be the important allies in this. If you don't listen and you start immediately, you come in with a point of view, you start, you know, jumping into action right away, you're going to make a lot of mistakes because you haven't built this nuanced and reasonably accurate picture of the landscape.
While Ravi says this in the context of a new board role, listening widely and deeply to understand the nuanced context is paramount before one embarks on a journey of change. Now, let's get back to the conversation with Mr. O.P. Bhatt.
And talking about decision making, I'm curious about you know, the notion of making decisions. Typically, most things that come to the board are not yes versus no decision. They're reasonably complex problems where the board has to take a call. So as a chairman, how do you see the role of a chairman in ensuring that you make a robust decision?
So again, my sense is that most of the things that come to the board, it's easy to take a decision around them. It's some of the nuances which can get difficult, or maybe there could be always an item or two which there is more, because many items are routine. And many things that the executives bring to the board, say it's a huge investment they have to make somewhere. They have actually anguished over it for weeks and months and days. They've got everything right in terms of argument, in terms of presentation, in terms of the maths, etc., everything. What happens when they bring it to the board is that the board members may not understand it fully, may have a lot of fill in the blanks in their minds, may have a lot of curiosity around it. And for some people in the board, they may have a point of view depending upon their own experience and background. What they know, it could be through their prior roles, it could be through newspaper, friends, gossip, whatever it is. But if they feel that there is a disconnect between what is being presented to the board and what they know from multiple sources, then they will bring this up. Now, usually it is the executive who is able to explain these things or fill in the information gap or data gap or whatever it is. So sometimes these things will go back because, you know, enough
could you're not ready to make a decision.
No. They may not, the executive may not have enough information. Or you don't want to make a decision pending this information, this clarification, this study, something like that. But it is rarely, you know, that the executive wants this decision to be taken, the board doesn't want to be taken, or within the board that there is a sharp divide. It is usually lack of information, lack of understanding. It's never should do it, no, we should not do it. It's very rare. And whenever these things are there, the two people feel differently, which they do, which happens quite often, I would say. This is where the chairman's role comes in, you know. So those people are thinking differently. He has to have a sense of, you know, where he's coming from and where he's coming from, right? And he has to ask the right question, you know, to encourage the right conversation either between the two of them or to third, fourth, fifth parties so that this issue which is troubling them gets more nuanced, you know, gets more embellished. Mm-hmm. You have more information, more light shed around it. And then it is possible that either both of them realize that actually they were talking about the same thing, but mm-hmm. they were looking at it from different angles. Or, you know, one says, yeah, I think you're right or something. Mm. So this is where the chairman is. But board is not a battleground. It never happens that there are all these things. Sometimes there's a fraud, if there's a malpractice, you know, one of those rare occurrences, it is possible. But business as usual, even if it is, you know, big business, big issues, big questions, big decisions, it's not like that in the board.
Got it.
There may be a lot of discussion.
Fair, fair.
Heated discussion.
Got it. And in what ways is, you know, leading a group of board members as a chairman different from leading a group of CXOs as a CEO of a company?
So it is something which I said earlier, as a chairman who's leading the executives, you know, they are supposed to deliver, they are supposed to perform. They are sort of quote unquote, you know, in your line of hierarchy, decision making line. So the entire psychology is completely different.
Mm.
The board member is a board member is a board member, right? I mean, you can't even ask him to do anything. Or if you ask him, I mean, you know, he may. What are you going to ask a board member to do actually? There is no task that you can ask him to do. You can ask him for information, you can ask him for wisdom, you can ask him for discussion, you can ask him that, you know, we've got some issues in that department, and I think, you know, some ethical issues or some risk not being managed well, and you may want the board member, because of who he is or where he comes from, to visit that department or to have a conversation with the senior group around that or whatever it is, you know. So it may be done in a meeting like this, or it could be done over dinner, it could be done formally. Something like that he will ask. There is no task that he can ask the board members to do. It is always about building bridges. It is always about sharing information. It is always about making things easier because of relationships, connections, networks. There is no task as such. Whereas to his own executive, he can ask for anything that his role requires. I mean, there is a set of KPIs,
sure.
There is a, you know, scorecard and all kinds of things on the performance matrix. So the relationships are quite different.
Hmm.
This is your host Deepak Jayaraman here. The other point to mention here is that while Mr. Bhatt talks about changing from controlling to influencing, the other nuance that people often miss out is that we often bring our biases from the past to the role, sometimes unconsciously. One of my earlier guests, Rama Bijapurkar, spoke about this in her conversation.
So a board role is nose in and fingers out, right? An executive role is fingers in and nose in and everything in.
Mm.
So that's why I think consultants make the transition more easily,
mm.
because we're quite happy to have our fingers out of things.
Right.
So that's the one thing I think executives, so you have to really, really, really understand that this is jury duty more than actually being the protagonist of the thing. That's hard.
Hmm.
But the other thing also is that I noticed that executive leaders who transition to non-executive, are you talking about executives going to executive board positions or executives going to non-executive?
Non-executive.
So when you go to non-executive board positions, we find that there is a lot of sympathy for the executive management.
Mm-hmm.
So we usually find that the board divides up when there are issues, and the executive guys who have been executives
mm-hmm.
have that all empathy and sympathy. And so they think their job is to sort of make up for the fact that they weren't protected in their tenures and to be the protector.
I can understand why he or she would.
Yeah, and that, oh, you know, our job here is not to disappoint the management. Whereas I'm saying, you know, you want, if you want acquisition desperately, I still don't have to give it to you. And if you're going to get demoralized, I mean, grow up. Right? Mm. Now, let's talk about why this is important. But my loyalty is somewhere else. It is not to you. I'm not here to be cheerleader, nursemaid, nappy, coach. I think that's the stuff that executive managers tend to get into. They
it's
get
great
into
insight.
Coaching.
The loyalty towards the management sort of comes by default.
And then therefore you're the coach and you're the this person and so on. As compared to saying that all of us on boards are called to make judgment calls. So whatever is your background, you bring your background judgment to make the judgment call, and that's all you should do. And you just make judgment calls for everything that's put in front of you. And these are sins of commission, sins of omission, you know, plans, whatever it is you have to, that's what you have to do. So that's what the executive management.
At some level, I guess this is a bit like method acting. You need to ensure that you're slipping into the shoes of the right character. For more, please visit Nugget 18.09 at playtopotential.com. Now, let's get back to the conversation with Mr. O.P. Bhatt.
How do you determine if you're adding value? You know, the sense I get is, you know, as a board member, sometimes, you know, you make a few, participate in a few discussions here and there, and you make a few statements. Net-net, when you go back home, when you're an executive, you know, you had a KPI, you met the KPI, and, you know, you've ticked the box. But as a board member, how do you...
So this is really important. And this, there are two things around this. So one is, again, it's the chairman's role. So I've seen boards where the chairman... takes time, you know, to spend some of it with you. It could be over a cup of tea. It could be, you know, just walking down the corridor or something like that. And to make some very helpful suggestions. So the intent is to tell something about your value or contribution as a board member. But it could come about by talking about something which happened or some topic. So it depends upon how wise or tactful the chairman is. So most good chairmen will find an opportunity and a way. Sometimes they will do it bluntly if it is necessary, but mostly it will be done very tactfully. So whether they are giving positive feedback or negative feedback, most chairmen find time, find a way, and find the person to tell him certain things, and they will. And if it is positive, they will really say, look, great, I really value your support, and I'm so delighted that you are on the board. So that's very easy, right?
Right.
But if he's saying something different or he wants to... So he's not condemning somebody, but he's trying to build up where he thinks there is a weakness or a deficiency. So then, again, it depends upon topic, tact, wisdom, and all those things. So that is one. So that is the chairman's role. The chairman's role is to get the best of all his people. So it cannot be only dialogue around the table. It has to be dialogue away from the table also. So one is the dialogue which I talked about, that issue-based and getting to know each other. But the other is this also, you know, feedback. And how do you give feedback? These are all senior people and some... And actually, surprisingly, the most senior you are, sometimes you can get hurt very quickly, right?
True.
The other is this board evaluation, right? Now, board evaluation, when it is done in-house by the board itself, the board members may not get any feedback on themselves, because in most boards, I find that every board member gives every other board member 5 out of 5. End of story, right? So you don't get anything. But sometimes, or at least every alternate year, this evaluation can and should be done, in my opinion, by an outside expert firm, board evaluation, right? So these people do quite an extensive job. They sit in meetings, they sit in boards, they interview people one-to-one, they ask all kinds of questions, they give written questionnaires, they interview each and every board member. And the purpose of this entire exercise, and it depends on how good this firm is, the entire exercise is to be helpful to the board committees, to the board directors, to observe what is happening. So interpersonal dynamics, usefulness of a committee, outcomes. They look at everything, right? And they can take a month or two or three even to look at it. It's, it doesn't happen overnight. Then the feedback that they give. So one, they give feedback to every individual. They will give some feedback to every individual, right? Then they give feedback about each individual to the chairman. Now, these two feedbacks can be different. Because there are certain things which an outside company will not tell every individual director. But whatever they have gleaned as a result of this exercise,
they are bound to tell everything to the chairman, right? So they will give feedback to individuals, they will give feedback to committees, they will give feedback to the board. They will actually come to the board and spend an hour or two telling them what they discovered during that month or two that they have been with the company to find out, right? The individual feedback is given to the chairman, right? Mm. Again, it is for the chairman. How does he use that individual feedback? If there is something important or something where the director needs to build upon, right? How he uses the feedback from an outside agency about a director in his board to the director, how, when, this, that. So therefore, if you look at it, the chairman's role actually is very, very important. And it's a role which is very difficult to define. And it's a role where, you know, how well he's doing his role, there'll be very little visibility on it, except that everything functions so well.
Got it. And back to the earlier point you made, Mr. Bhatt, about being tactful. Again, decode that for us. As a chairman giving sensitive feedback, developmental feedback to a board member, what are the two, three things?
Tact, maybe tact is not the right word. What I mean is, you know, while being fully respectful of your colleague who's on your board and serving your board, your company's interest, still there is something more that you want him to do or something different that you want him to do. And you're mindful of the fact that by giving this feedback, you're not sure how it will be taken or, you know, whether there is any emotional quotient around it, right? There may be none, but you have to be mindful that there could be one, right? And you don't want to hurt anybody. I mean, I'm assuming that all board members are actually doing the best according to their lights, right? But according to the lights of the chairman, according to the lights of colleagues, according to the light of these outside agencies, maybe, you know, there is, you know, all of us can do something more. You know, I keep learning even now every day, right? Something or the other, if somebody tells me or I realize for myself. So how do you create that atmosphere and how do you find that language, that opportunity, you know?
And actually, if I may ask a mirror image question, as a chairman, how do you get feedback on yourself from the board members? How do you approach that?
Yeah, so again, good chairman. So again, this is good you're asking this question because chairman role is really very important. Good chairman actually ask for feedback. They will ask for feedback. So they may not ask every board member, but I have known many chairmen asking me. They want to know either in, again, it will be either in the context of something that has happened or they may even ask something in general. And I have always felt that it is my duty to tell the chairman things, just like that the chairman has to tell the board member things, good for the individual, good for the board. Yeah. So I think it's the duty of the director also, if he feels strongly enough to find time and tell the chairman or as and when the chairman invites, because most good chairmen, they may not take feedback from every board member, but in their mind, they will say, let me ask him. So they will also find an opportunity over a cup of tea, maybe a glass of wine, something like that. And again, they will put it in context with something that has happened and all that, you know. So how do you think that happened? And that? I was thinking I'll do that, but do you think I did the right thing? Okay, so in general, I should not be doing this. They will find some language. But a good chairman has to be very, very conscious of the fact, how is he doing? How is he coming across? Because he may be, you know, damaging the entire board. He should know that.
True.
And the good ones among them do try to find this out.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
I keep learning even now every day, right? Something or the other, if somebody tells me or I realize for myself. So how do you create that atmosphere and how do you find that language, that opportunity, you know?
And actually, if I may ask a mirror image question, as a chairman, how do you get feedback on yourself from the board members? How do you approach that?
Yeah, so again, good chairman. So again, this is good you're asking this question because chairman role is really very important. Good chairman actually ask for feedback. They will ask for feedback. So they may not ask every board member, but I have known many chairmen asking me. They want to know either in, again, it will be either in the context of something that has happened or they may even ask something in general. And I have always felt that it is my duty to tell the chairman things, just like that the chairman has to tell the board member things, good for the individual, good for the board. Yeah. So I think it's the duty of the director also, if he feels strongly enough to find time and tell the chairman or as and when the chairman invites, because most good chairmen, they may not take feedback from every board member, but in their mind, they will say, let me ask him. So they will also find an opportunity over a cup of tea, maybe a glass of wine, something like that. And again, they will put it in context with something that has happened and all that, you know. So how do you think that happened and that? I was thinking I'll do that, but I, do you think I did the right thing? Okay, so in general, I should not be doing this. They will find some language. But a good chairman has to be very, very conscious of the fact, how is he doing? How is he coming across? Because he may be, you know, damaging the entire board. He should know that.
True.
True. And the good ones among them do try to find this out.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So just a couple of questions to wrap up, Mr. Bhatt. One is, I think if you had to be immodest about your trajectory and accomplishments, you know, I'm curious about people's principles and attitudes which have, you know, helped them grow and achieve great things. So if you had to be really, if you had to look at yourself objectively, what about you, you think has enabled you to come this far? If you really look at your growth in SBI and your roles in boards, talk to us about some things that are close to your heart which have helped you in this journey.
So, one, I think, is that I have always had the drive to deliver on my role. Always I have had the drive. Whichever task has been given, somehow, this has come up again and again in this conversation that I have not felt up to the task and I have always looked for ways and means. And then, usually I have delivered or over-delivered. That is one. The other is, this is one of the mantras which I used when I was leading State Bank of India, that everybody has a role. And if you do your role, fine. But what's so great about it? What is the plus in the role? So everybody must have a role plus. You have a role. And that plus you decide for yourself. It could be coaching a colleague. It could be getting a PhD. It could be instead of financing 100 cars, you finance 110 cars. You decide. But there has to be a plus in your role. And it is that plus that makes you different from others. And it is that plus which defines the direction and the quality of your growth. Because different people will have a different plus. Some people may want to do yoga 1 hour every morning. It's fine with me, as long as there is a plus to it. So one is this, you know, things around drive, you know, that, you know, and this is coming not from a sense of achievement, but actually from a sense of duty, from, you know, mera kaam hai, mujhe karna hai isko. It's not that maine kar liya, not from that perspective, but, you know, it's my job, it's my duty. It's being, I mean, I have to do that as an obligation, duty, whatever it is. So that is one very strong drive that I've had everywhere. The other is that maybe this has, you know, built up over time, or because I work in a bank, which is a service industry. You know, many of the things that you do, it's really a great pleasure to work in a service industry or in a bank like that. I mean, you find that by doing things, you are making so many people happy, right? It may not happen in other manufacturing or if you are in a sales job or something like
that. You're touching lives directly.
So not only, so many people become aware of it. I became aware of it or things like that. But your colleagues, you can make them aware of it. So when I was in Guwahati, as Circle CGM, I used to tell my people that, you know, when you are in a counter, clerk, say for example, is a teller counter, and they say somebody has come to you to purchase a draft, right? It's a draft because it could be school admission, hospital, whatever it is, right? At that time, you are the most important person in the whole world for him. Not even God is important, you are important. And you are having a cup of tea, you are having a cigarette, you are chatting, what nonsense, right? But if you were to realize this, then suddenly, you know, your demeanor, your behavior, everything will change for you. Therefore, everything changes for him. And it becomes some kind of a beneficial circle all around it. So some of this joy in the job, so to say, maybe it is because it was the service sector. Also, when I was in school, the motto of my school was, in Hindi it was Uddemo hi para puja, you know, work is worship or service is worship or whatever it is. So partly it was maybe subconsciously instilled, partly because if I had got into IS, I wouldn't have thought like that. So some of these things I would say.
Got it. And in summary, Mr. Bhatt, this podcast is titled Play to Potential, which is about individuals discovering what is their plus or what is their potential, to use your language, and really playing the best game. So in summary, what are the one or two things you want to leave the listeners with for them to play to their potential?
Most people don't know what is their potential. That's the problem. Most people don't know what is their potential. I mean, I didn't know, you know, for a long time.
So I can see all the things which people say, you know, about sincerity, hard work, this, that, and the other. But I think two things if people do, it would help them realize their potential. One is every morning, just spend 5 minutes just listening what you have to, what you've forgotten all these days and you have to do. It could be making a phone call, saying thank you for something, buy something. Whatever it is, random, mundane thing, just write it down every day. And in the evening, just spend another 5 minutes thinking about, you know, how the day went and what is it that you could have done different. Not necessarily better, but different. I think within a week, a month, somehow clarity will come around a lot of issues, including potential. It seems completely unrelated, disconnected.
Mm.
These two things, two different things, five minutes. It will shed a lot of clarity because as things happen, you will find that you are more focused because in that morning, like it used to happen to me, right? Sometimes I have not responded to an email for weeks around because I've just forgotten about it or forgot to ring up my daughter or something like that, right? These are important. Now you've forgotten, you've not done it, but your subconscious has not forgotten. It is creating some, you know, disturbing energy there all the time, not allowing you to work to your full potential throughout the day. So if you do this for 10 days, 50 days, that negative energy goes away out of your system. Likewise, in the evening when you spend time, that how you could have done. So for example, if I were to spend time today evening, how I could have given you slightly different answers. Next time, if not you, somebody else were to talk to me, it will be a better thing, right? So over time, it reduces disturbance in the conscious, subconscious. It improves focus. And will somehow help you realize, you know, where you should be going. You can use the word potential for this.
Lovely. Really, really a delight talking to you, Mr. Bhatt. That's a very tactical and implementable finish to the conversation. So thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you found the conversation purposeful. There were 5 big takeaways for me in this conversation. The first thing that struck me was the point Mr. Bhatt makes about having a plus in every role beyond what is expected of you. I guess it's a pretty simple point, but something we forget so often. Nobody became great by following the job description that was given to them. The second thing that stayed with me was the point he made about board member effectiveness possibly having a greater correlation with a contributory mindset than the competencies of the individual. In most professional roles, this mindset versus skill set dichotomy exists, and it shows up differently in each situation. For example, commercial acumen versus finance toolkit, people orientation versus HR capability, giving mindset versus social work degree. I guess the key is that when you're on the margin, the skill set can often be taught, but it's often much harder to rewire a mindset, especially when somebody is at the tenure of a chief exec looking to become a board member. So it's worth having an honest look in the mirror to see if you have that mindset and whether you're getting onto the boards for the right reasons. The third thing that struck me was the board role requires a very different style of getting things done as compared to leading a company. Most people often don't quite appreciate the gravity of this transition. This can be extremely tricky for people who've been successful leaders in a quote-unquote command and control paradigm. Recognizing this shift and seeking external help if you need it, like having a coach, could be of value to leaders that are looking to be effective board members. As Marshall Goldsmith says, this is one of those points in time where the notion of what got you here won't get you there applies in a pretty profound way. The fourth piece I took away was how Mr. Bhatt talks about the feedback process as a chairman on the board. While he talks about this in the context of the board, I feel the principles apply to CEOs when they look at their leadership teams. There are 3 pieces of feedback to be given and received. 1. Feedback to the leader on how the team members stack up as individuals and as a collective. 2. How the leader is performing the leadership role, whether it's a chairperson or a CEO. The 2nd is the feedback to each of the team members on their effectiveness in their roles. This is a series of one-on-one private confidential conversations. And the 3rd is feedback to the team as a collective on what's working well and where the opportunities are in terms of improving the culture and the team effectiveness. Leaders sometimes don't look at all 3 facets of feedback when they take stock of their leadership teams. The 5th and the final thing that stuck with me was what Mr. Bhatt says in the end. 5 minutes in the beginning of the day to think about what the key priorities are, and 5 minutes in the end of the day to take stock of not just what you could have done differently, but what different things could have been done but never got done. Thank you for your listening. Signing off, this is your host Deepak Jayaraman. To know more about the coaching and the transition advisory work I do, please visit transitioninsight.com. Bye now.